Hey, this is Island breaking in before the episode even starts to apologize. Due to scheduling problems and the holiday season in general, we were not able to include our interview with Amanda, this Christmas sweater designer, in this episode, but hopefully we will get that to you soon.
You sure looking crafty. You could make a raft out of pencils and foam. You sure looking happy.
So, hello.
Hi.
And welcome to... Miranda's holding up her hand.
Is it five? Like, I had a moment. I was like, it's five.
It's our high five hand. Episode.
High five. Did it. Not quitters. We paid for the website. We got to keep going. Yeah. Yep.
That's true.
I'm really into singing obvious points now, because why just say them when you can bring some panache?
I've been doing that a lot lately. And I think at home, obviously, that's totally fine. Like, my husband knows that I'm a goofball. But I started doing it in front of my employees. And I don't know if they find it as charming.
I sing it a lot. I sing a lot of phrasing. And I think it also might be because I've checked out of the Christmas music that I am feeling the spirit come through.
Sure.
In my mundane tasks.
Yeah.
And Chris has caught the spirit with me. We were shopping the other day and we saw some ridiculous shoes at Dillard's. And they might have looked like something that Tina Turner wore at, Mad Max and Thunderdome?
Ooh, yes.
And so the first thing Chris said, he was like, "We don't need another hero." And he just said it without thinking, because we've been singing all day to each other. And this woman next to me looked at me to make sure it was okay to laugh. And I gave her the nod, like, "It's cool. He wanted you to hear this." And she just fell out. The whole shoe department was like, "Oh boy, not only is a man in here, but he is making some commentary." So I am a fan of singing many things, whether actual songs or just, "I'm cuddling this puppy. It loves me because I give it food and warm treats." Yeah, like that's kind of.
That's actually better than mine. That actually had like, it sort of rhymed a little bit. You know, my songs don't do that. And I also, like I said, am a little self-conscious about the fact that I'm supposed to be the person in charge of stuff at work. Like, I'm supposed to be making the tough decisions and, you know, training people and all that stuff. And
I'm interrupting because I really believe in letting you know to be kind to yourself. You're setting the tone of a good working environment.
Well, it's a working environment, that's for sure.
It's that.
It is one of them.
Oh my God, if you had to do your year-end feedback to somebody, be like, "You're really killing it. I'm loving it, but you're actually killing the experiments."
You're literally killing the stem cells. Wow, nobody's going to listen to this podcast anymore.
No,
I'll just say
it. You know what? What if they're inspired, Island? Inspired to bring singing to their everyday lives.
Yeah, I mean,
you're welcome.
I don't know if my singing is going to be what does that, but you know, if that's what it does, if that does it for somebody, then I'm happy to make a fool of myself.
I was just going to add a word to the wise. If you're starting out with singing, I highly recommend finding songs that have the word "you" in them and rhyming them with "poo," because it's really fun. You can generally talk about your dogs and your cats.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Motown is excellent choices.
That's true.
For making songs about poo. And, well, you know,
it's really Motown great. Is excellent for pretty much everything. Plus, it sort of inspires you to dance at the same time, which really, I think, ups the comedic effect.
Absolutely.
So speaking of comedic effect, what is in your cup?
Okay.
I know that was the segue to end all segues.
It was. Well, I'm going to say this, that speaking of holiday cheer, which alcohol helps fuel many of those things, and maybe some other things that aren't so good, I am drinking white wine tonight. I'm going to get white girl wasted during this podcast. And not afraid to admit it. Not afraid to admit that I like a nice Pinot Grigio it's a little bit of mommy's medicine. Just a little, little tiny bit of medicine to get me through the day. It's only 7:20 in the evening, but here we are. I have a feeling that what you're going to say is way better than my cheap Pinot. What are you having?
This is one of my crafting experiments. I had some cranberries left over from Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And you know, cranberries pretty much don't die. So,
I mean, I don't even know if you can eat them. I'm just literally like, are they decoration? Can you eat them? I grew up in Wisconsin. I know you can eat them. But they're not
unpleasant.
You can't pop them like a blueberry.
Mm-mm. No, no.
It's a commitment.
What I did was I made a simple syrup with cranberries, star anise, and then the simple syrup, instead of being 1-to-1 sugar in water, it's 1-to-1 honey in water. Mm. So it has a lot of like the warm flavors of the honey. And it's actually honey that we brought back from Greece that Pat's sister-in-law got for us. So it's really nice honey. And then the star anise is just regular star anise. And it's a really nice, it's a really nice color, obviously, like it's red holiday, you know. And the recipe that I found was on some website that doesn't really have a lot of great stuff on it. But basically, I was looking around for like things that go well with cranberry. And I have this book called The Flavor Bible that said, you know, cranberry flavors go well with anise and thyme and orange. And I kind of looked around my kitchen and I was like, anise, that's what I have. So I made a simple syrup with those things and I mixed it with Trader Joe's Brut Rosé Reserve.
Nice.
What can I say?
Sounds fancy.
I'm a holiday ass bitch. Like I love the holidays. I love Christmas stuff. I love Christmas food. I could do without most of the like Christmas music, but like Harry Potter, Nightmare Before Christmas, you know, all that stuff. I love all of it. And so this is how I decided to start getting in the spirit.
I love it. And I love that you crafted that. I think that making a new syrup like that is, it's a simple way to do something. I mean, it's not simple.
It is technically simple. It is technically syrup, yes.
Oh, you got me there.
That was not funny. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Actually, I'm sure someone out there is giggling really hard. Just not me. I'm just kidding. But I'm just saying, like, that is also a basis for a number of other things that you can blend it with or do something with. And I'm wondering if you can even make an Italian soda out of it or something.
Oh, definitely.
For a non-alcoholic thing.
Definitely. Cool. Yeah, so for anybody who has never done this before, simple syrup is so named because of how easy it is to make. Essentially, it's 1 cup of sugar, and whatever your sugar is, it doesn't matter what it is. It can be granulated sugar, honey, maple syrup, whatever. And then 1 cup of water, and you boil it just enough that the sugar dissolves, and then let that cool off, and you can refrigerate it. And it lasts, you know, maybe a week or two, and you can then infuse that with any flavors that you like whatever you happen to have lying around that sounds like it might taste good in a beverage to you or in a popsicle, you can do that. And for this sort of holiday thing, if licorice flavors are not your thing, so like a lot of people don't like anise because it's a strong flavor. I happen to really like it, but it's not for everybody. You could replace the anise in this with thyme, which would be super nice and a little bit herbal. You could replace it with orange zest. And that would be really awesome. And all you have to do essentially is when you're boiling after you're boiled the sugar and water, you add whatever flavors you want to add to it and let it chill there until everything cools off and then strain out the solids. And you've got a infused flavored simple syrup that you can put in pretty much any drink. So if you want it to be non-alcoholic, you just add some, you know, sparkling water. If you want it to be alcoholic, add any alcohol of your choice, and it's great.
Well, I imagine like it could be really good with gin because that's kind of an herbal
kind
of taste. I think that would be really good for gin. And I think obviously great choice on champagne too, which is a little bit easier to drink as a punch kind of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to take to somebody's house if you don't know what kinds of things that they like.
Right.
Yeah.
But if I was having a party at my house, I would definitely, I'm all about bringing the punch bowl back. I'm all about bringing the punch bowl. And when I lived in San Francisco, my beloved upstairs neighbors, Jim and Manuel, they always had a punch rolling because all the people at Flora Grub would just come over and hang out. And they were just like into like, let's just throw this stuff together and come up with a punch. And I was like, y'all are having a great time. I like the camaraderie and the planning around this. It's cool. So
yeah,
bring back the punch. Bring it back.
I like it. Although I had a hard time finding punch bowls that I like anymore. Like I've seen antique ones that I really like and I've seen them at friends' houses, but I haven't found any lately that I really love for my own house. So I don't have a punch bowl yet, but I'm on the market for it.
I'm keeping my eyes up for a Tom and Jerry one, just like Jim and Manuel's. I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. That one's pretty popular. So there's bound to be more, but anyways, enough about my vintage finds. I'm sure my boyfriend can find vintage stuff. He just has like, he finds stuff on the street. So God bless. He'll find it for me.
That's
if
true
I,
too.
If I ask, he'll find it. What were we going to, we beyond what's in our cups here, we actually had some, we have a lot of stuff going on, and I think everyone does because it's the holiday season. So I think that we should get to our work in progress idea, like those things, as well as maybe some ideas for gifting because, hey, it's that time. Mm-hmm. All right. So what are you working on right now?
So right now, the thing that I can talk about, so it's because it is tis the season for gifting, there are things that I have made that I cannot talk about on the podcast right now. But I finished all of my stuff that I was knitting for other people. So I did I don't want to say a selfish thing, because I don't really think it's bad. I finished knitting for everybody else, but I started something for myself, which is the yoga shawl by fellow Michigander, Andrea Mowry. So it's very similar in some ways, actually, to the scarf that mom gave you a long time. It's like a travel scarf that has buttons up the side that you can style in a bunch of different ways. So it's basically a large stole almost. It's a long rectangular piece. And the way that the yoga shawl is designed is that it's got buttons on the short end of the rectangle, but only on one side. That would obviously match up with the buttonholes on the short end of the other rectangle, or the other side of the rectangle, if you wanted to make a cowl or an infinity scarf. But it also has buttons partway across the long edge starting from the corner. So the buttons make an L on the corner of the scarf. And then on the other side of the long end. So if you laid it out long ways, there would be one sort of L that would be buttons on the short end and a little bit on the long end. And then on the other side, there's buttonholes on the short end and matching on the part of the long end so that you can essentially make a poncho out of it. You can make a wrap out of it. You don't have to button anything. And then you can just wear it as a scarf if you like. So it's really versatile. And I'm basically making it because I've noticed that shawls are actually really popular for hand knitting designers right now, but ponchos are also really popular. But
I was gonna say, like, the blanket scarves are pretty out there right now. Everyone's going with multi-use, you know, accessories. It's
cool. And I felt like I really wanted to have a poncho, but I didn't want to have a poncho that was a permanent poncho that couldn't be done as anything else, right? Because I don't know how long the poncho is going to be in again. And once it's not in anymore, it's really not going to be in. Like, it is a dramatic statement piece.
ponchos and drug rugs, excuse me, bajas are all, yeah. They have a time and a place and it's real quick. Flashes mm-hmm. in the pan. Every like 10 years, everyone's like, oh, bring this back. But don't bring it back for too long. Because, yeah. And then it becomes a lifestyle. It's no longer trend. It's just, that's your life now. You're poncho wearer.
You're
it's,
that guy who wears a Baja. Like, you, I don't want to be mm-mm. that person. So, so this is something that sort of gets at that same vibe. But then when that time has passed, it will become a scarf again. And nobody will be any the wiser. So the way that it's designed, I described the buttons, and then for the actual design of it itself, it's hard to see, but it's got chevrons at one end that are, it's just a textured stitch that makes a chevron pattern. So it's not color work, although I suppose you could probably do it in colors if you wanted to, but I just am doing everything in one solid color, and it's a chevron stitch on one end, and then flat stockinette stitch, that very flat stitch all the way across. So it's very good social knitting, you know, so you can like go out in public and knit and don't have to think too hard about what you're knitting. You can talk to other people, you can watch a movie, you know, that type of thing. So that was the other reason that I chose it, was that I felt like during the holiday season, I wanted to be working on something that didn't make me want to cry because I kept screwing it up. Essentially.
Wow. Good point. Hey, you know your limits, know your boundaries. I think that is a wise choice. I'm a yeah. fan. Good yeah. for you on working for something for yourself too. I think retailers are always like, one for you, one for them. Like, they're like, always shop for yourself. But I think it goes the same way for making things for people. Like, you can pour your love into making an item for somebody. And, you know, some people do get caught up in some expectations, and it can be really hard when people don't love it as much as you did. But at the same time, when you make something for yourself, you get to appreciate your own craft. I think that's awesome.
Well, yeah, and it is something that actually I think among many different types of crafters is a bit controversial. There are some people, it seems to drive people to kind of polarized positions. There are some people who always craft things at the holidays because that brings them joy. Like they want to make things for people. They probably have people in their lives who have really appreciated the things that they made for them. But you also get, I think, equally many people who are absolutely on the polar opposite end, who literally never make anything for anybody at the holidays. And it's not that they don't make anything for anybody ever, but not at Christmas. That's mm-hmm. the wrong time for that kind of stress and, like you say, expectations. So it's pretty funny. So I thought it, yeah, there's a bit of controversy for selfish knitting in what is supposed to be a selfless season. But I managed to do both and assuage all of my guilt for everything, which I think is sort of like the most Lutheran way to do it.
How very Midwestern of me. Oh my God. You're like, I'm going to make sure that there's no guilt. Yeah. On all sides. Oh my God, that's so great.
What about you? What have you been working on?
All right. So my works in progress are actually very much career work related. So I've since left Lucky Brand about 3 weeks ago. So yeah. And I've been there for 3 years. And when you're at a company, like generally speaking, you have to win your way in. And it's the best way of putting it. Like, they might recruit you, but you got to show your skills. And I'm currently in the process of interviewing with a couple companies, and that involves making projects for them. If they like you enough, they ask you to dance. And by asking you to dance, they're like, do work. And it's
for $0.
Yeah. Like, I'll show you mine if you show me yours, kind of thing. And it's a vulnerable position to be in because you are exposing your taste level, you're giving your best ideas, you're really, I'm not saying boiling the ocean, but you're thinking outside of your current zone. And it's great. It's a great creative exercise. I get really jazzed to do these projects. I think that they show creative thinking, and they show your ability to like flex in and out of roles and places. But the roles I'm working on are not men's denim. So this is where it gets really interesting, where I get to dive back into different categories, different age groups, And it's just, it's cool. It's cool, but it is all encompassing. It takes all your energy and time. And I would love to do more crafts, but I have essentially given my creative energy to these projects. And for those who don't know what those projects look like, it's generally, it's like coming up with a presentation board. And there's going to be a view of like, this is what I think your brand is. So this is like, do we see the same thing? Do we see the same growth pattern? Like, don't show me what we already are, but show us where we're going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's like, you have to show an elevated view of where this brand or company is going. You then have to go through a seasonal concept as far as like the season that they're referring to. Is it going to be for fall, holiday, spring, or summer?
And do they tell you in advance what they want you to design for? Or do you, are you supposed to know what would be next based on the current time of year? Like, are you supposed to be able to predict, or do they tell you what they want?
They'll tell you, because every company now works on their own calendar's time frame. Like, it's very interesting to me, because when I worked at Target versus Levi's, their calendar systems are very different, because some are chasing into things, others are working in giant volume. So they work, you know, essentially two big seasons a year versus, you know, four. Mm-hmm. And it just depends on your business. It depends on like, how often is it important to drop new ideas, new product out there for the, you know, the consumers to buy? Or is it about investing big, like buying really big into one product that's going to sell out? So like, that involves like a year or even 18 months of planning ahead, just to make sure that the fabric is made. Like, it's a weird amount of commitment time. So luckily, when you get these projects, they're not going all the way down to a production level, but they are going to tell you what season they're looking for based on what season they're in, which is cool. But it is the best litmus test of like, are you seeing what we're seeing? And do you see where we're going to go? Because no one wants to see what we've already done. If you were, if you like, as someone who used to hire people at my past jobs, it's, if I see what I've already done, I'm uninterested. I'm looking for like something that is essentially moving it on. Or if I've thought of an idea that I think is like a little out there, if someone else thought of that same idea, I'm like, oh, our brains kind of think similarly, or that's kind of interesting. But also, depending on the type of team, the type of people, you're looking for someone who doesn't think like you. You're looking for a diverse team. You don't want all the same people, because you're just going to get the same thing again and again. So it's a really interesting dance in which you're presenting concepts, vision, and then also just technical skill. Like, oh, these are the styles, and this is what those styles would look like if I was to sketch them up and put them into production. It's a cool thing, but it is vulnerable. You're literally exposing your best ideas and hoping that everyone else is really excited about it too. So those are things that take days and days for me to get together, because the research alone takes so much time. The actual putting it together, not long, but the idea of research and following your intuition and your instinct is good, but you also want to make sure that you're not just repeating yourself, you know? So it's very interesting, but that's what I've been doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So if it's not, revealing too much about the industry, what does it mean to do research for a project like that? Like, what counts as research, or what would you do to like get yourself to the point where you could do that board?
So depending on the brand, depending on the category and the actual, you know, what they're looking for, my research involves going shopping. Like, I'll look at the brand itself, I'll look at its competitors, its brand benchmarks, and then elevated benchmarks. So like, if some brand is at the mall, I'll look at all of their competitors within the mall. But then I'm also going to go a couple steps above and go to boutiques. I'm going to go to larger specialty stores. And then I'm also going to check runway. I'm going to look for everything that I can kind of sense, all the layers, all the levels in which they might be inspired or comparing themselves to. The next part of the research is something that I prefer to do, which is I go vintage shopping. I'll talk to dealers, like private dealers. I'll also go to well-known vintage shops, or even just thrift stores, depending on what I'm looking for, to get vintage details or things, you know. The best way of putting it is like, you're never going to have a complete original thought. Go back and honor the people before you who have led the way and see what's out there that could be done a little better, done a little differently with the technology that we have. But generally speaking, a circle skirt is a circle skirt. Like, you can't really change that so much. But get some ideas. You know, look out there and look for color. I love color stories, especially if they've been aged and oxidized. Those always look really cool to me. And also, like, you get a certain sense of style from vintage dealers, because everyone has an eye. Everyone edits differently. So there's certain vintage dealers I love to talk to, shop their wares, make appointments with, because they have an eye for something that I'm like, oh, you always pick out the best dresses. You always pick out the best textiles. Mm. So there are people I know that I want to go to. There's people on Instagram. Some of those vintage dealers have Instagrams, and you get to see their editing happen in real time, which is pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So it's really just like, it's shopping, researching through, like, you know, catwalk all the way down to like Instagram. That's mm-hmm. what I generally think of it as. And then on a very practical level, I check out every other brand that's doing a certain thing or category. I turn their garments inside out. I want to know how they made it. I want to know where they made it.
So you mean physically inside out? You literally turn the item inside out.
Yeah, I pull it all inside out because I want to know. But I'm that kind of person. I'm definitely like, I don't want to speak to one thing and then not know what I'm talking about. I want to say like, oh, I can save you money in production by doing it like this. You guys are doing it this way. And that also is a conversation with the people who are hiring me. I'm like, why did you do it this way? Mm-hmm. They might have a better reason. So there's a practicality, like a very, you know, very clear construction detail that leads your business, as well as an inspirational creative aesthetic that leads your business. So I like looking at all sides.
That's awesome.
I hope that makes, does that make sense? It seems like I'm getting a little nerdy here, but I like it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me as somebody who does actually construct garments to some degree. I don't sew. It's never been something that I've been very good at. And I've always been a little nervous about sewing, because when you are putting together anything that you're sewing, I mean, it could just be a pillowcase, but you are taking fabric, you're taking an integral whole and then cutting it up into parts so that you can assemble it into something different. And mm-hmm. There's a certain degree to which you cannot go backwards. So once you've made a mistake, that's it. Like you've cut that fabric and now you can seam it back up, but it's going to have a seam in it. Like it's going to have a visible scar. It's not going to be something that you can just undo. Whereas knitting and crocheting, like if I make a mistake, I can just undo it. You know, I'm not committing to that. And I think that's part of what's driven me not to do quilting and sewing and those types of garment construction. But it is something that I do think about. You know, like I make sweaters, I make socks, and I do think about where the seams fall and what the seams are supposed to be doing so that I can decide what type of seam I'm supposed to make. And if people are interested in those types of things, you know, we can spend some more time talking about that on a different episode if people really want to hear about the details of how you would choose a certain construction
right.
to make a garment function the way that it is supposed to function. But anyway, I think about those things, but I don't think about it in those terms for clothing that I buy in stores. I think I sort of look at clothing in stores and decide if I like it or don't like it, and if it fits me or doesn't fit me, which is hilarious, right? Because I should be able to keep in mind that I can also get things tailored, but somehow when I get in the store, I don't want to deal with that stuff. But yeah, it's just interesting that you approach it in such a different way, which is really cool.
Well, and I'll say this about knitting. I know how to knit, but I never continued it because to me it's unwieldy. Like I literally cannot control, despite blocking, despite your making your swatch, there's things that go awry that I can't stomach, I can't handle. Like the idea of like running out of yarn and it's not the same dye lot, I would lose my mind. Lose my mind. And so like, and I just imagine that I'd become the person who overbuys yarn. And then I have all these weird orphans that I have to like figure out later. Like
it's those not might an be... orphan, Miranda. That's a collection. It's collection. A curated, edited collection of fiber art.
Oh, that's how we go with it. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. But those are things that I'm like, I will totally, I already have, I don't want to call it my mom here, but our mom has a tendency to buy like, oh, if it's good, buy three.
Yeah.
Just go for it. Just go for it. And I definitely already do that. So it's like with yarn, I would lose my mind. But I've already been like so – of the three projects I've done knitting, I've been surprised each time by how it doesn't fit the way I want. And mm-hmm. at least with pattern making, and this is a big divide between fashion designers, anyone in this world, you either kind of fall on the draping love side or you follow the pattern making side. And I am one of those people who love, I love solid answers. I love finite things. Draping involves a beautiful art and a way of using a piece of fabric that can really flow. And ooh, my cat definitely just knocked over my brick on my computer. Sorry, that was loud.
Yeah, cats are jerks.
Yeah, pretty much. I haven't lived with a cat in a long time and I'm learning right now. Anyways, but for pattern making, it's a finite thing to a degree. And I love that about denim. Denim is something that like you make denim yours. It molds to your body. You're going to make it work. Mm-hmm. It's a force. It's a bit of a force. Versus like when you look at evening gowns or draped bias things or circle skirts, that's mm-hmm. a bias. There's that fabric makes the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Different fabrics will make it flow a different way. But in denim, there's a bit of a force structure. It's mm-hmm. a little bit more of like 3D construction versus, I mean, everything's 3D, but yeah, I don't know. I like the math of it. I like the complexities of it. I love how denim can change a body. I like that bodies change denim. There's just such a cool symbiotic relationship. So yeah. I don't know. I'm not afraid of cutting and sewing as much as I'm afraid of knitting something up and being disappointed when I can't block it right. Or if I block it, or even if it's not blocked right. I mean, I'm not speaking to the right terms.
No, that's
it does not.
Yeah, that's the right term.
And choosing the yarn type there's so many options. So many options.
That's true. You can get lost in the planning stage. But for anybody, yes. This is a little gift for anybody in the audience who does not knit. Blocking is a thing that anybody can do with their knitted garments.
Sweaters.
Yep.
T-shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anything that is knitted, and that includes extremely fine knits like T-shirts. So blocking is the process by which you use water to reshape a garment. And so in knitting, people refer to blocking as one of their final steps in making the knitted item have the right final shape. So you'll, you know, knit up a sweater and you'll knit it the way that the pattern was designed. But as Miranda has suggested, when you put the seams in and all that stuff, it kind of gets a little bunchy and a little bit weird, but blocking is magic. You put it in your, you put it in your washing machine, your top loading washing machine, or in a sink or a basin or a bathtub, if that's all you have. And you soak the knitted item in lukewarm water. You don't swirl it around. Don't agitate it. Don't rub it, but just like press it down into the water. After 15 minutes, take it out. Just gently squeeze the water out of it. Don't wring it like a washcloth, but just gently squeeze it out. And then lay it down on some towels and push it into the shape that you want it to be. This is really great for like if you have a sweater at home where like the elbows kind of bag out a little more than you want them to, or, you know, the collar has gotten a little looser than you want it to. These kinds of things can really help. If it's an acrylic sweater, I can't save you. I can't help you with that. That's a beast that can't, that, you know.
It's been made and it's never going to change.
No. But if the item that you're talking about is wool in particular, cotton also will work, silk, alpaca, any animal.
Natural fiber.
Yep. Any natural fiber, if it's from a plant or an animal. Blocking is magic, and you don't have to be a knitter to do it. You don't have to be a crafter to do it. So that's my Christmas gift to you. Maybe some of your clothing will come back to life.
A funny little side note. I was doing laundry with my boyfriend, Chris, the other day, and he pulled out my sweaters. And he's like, what are these doing in here? And I was like, I'm going to wash them. And he's like, what? He's like, and what are you going to do after? And I was like, I'm going to dry them. And he was like, you're a monster. He was so upset that I was taking my natural fiber sweaters and washing and drying them. But they were also like garbage sweaters. Like, I don't want to tell you the prices, but they're real cheap. They're cheaper than the cost of being made, right? The cost of goods was lower than it, or I paid less than the cost of goods. I'll say that. Anyways, he was so offended that I did not take the time to block my sweater, because he blocks all, he hand washes and then lays out very carefully his sweaters. Because he's like, don't you want them to last? And I was like, well, I do. And he's like, don't you care about the shape? And I was like, I mean, I kind of do. And it was just such a big difference between us, because he is very careful with his things. And I might not be. So maybe that's, again, why knitting is not good for me. But maybe he might be a great knitter. He might. Who knows?
I mean, it's certainly, I don't do that with every single sweater I have or anything like that. But, you know, for the things that I handmade, I definitely do, because, and I don't necessarily block them the exact same way every time. Like, I'll block it the way I think I want it to be blocked, and I'll wear it for a little while. And if it turns out that I don't really like it, I'll just re-wet it and do it differently. You know, like I might pull it a little bit longer in the body if I don't want it to be so short, mm-hmm. or if it's kind of clinging to me too much and I want it to be drapier, I'll pull it widthwise to like give myself some more space, some more ease. You know, you can kind of mess with it now and again. And if it's wool, it'll spring back the minute you put it in water. So
it's a new day every time.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah. So shall we move on to our Christmas gifts for crafters?
I think so. I'm really excited about this, because it kind of, I generally, these are all things I want to buy myself, but don't buy myself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that other people identify with it. So yeah. I think it's pretty cool. And I think that other people might have some great ideas. If people have suggestions, they can list them on the Instagram post or anywhere of our Ravelry or anything like that. I just think that, you know, and everyone's different. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. And so what we decided to do was to not make an exhaustive laundry list, because that's boring anyway, but to have an item that we picked that was a super cheap item, something that was more moderately priced, and something that was a bit of a splurge, so that whoever it is in your life that you're thinking about giving a gift to, or whatever your budget might be, we have a good suggestion for all budgets.
Mm-hmm. I dig it. All right. Do you want to start, or would you like me to start?
Why don't you start?
All right. So the three categories that we have is, as Alan's saying, dirt cheap, around $20, and the big splurge. So for my dirt cheap gift that I would love, and I think a lot of other crafters would love, just regardless of what kind of craft you do, is moisturizer or salve. Like, I think that any of those things, especially, doesn't matter what climate you're in, but if you're working with your hands, they're going to get dry. They're going to get nasty. So like, it could be as cheap as something from the store, like a regular grocery store or department store, or it can be up to, you know, a much more beautiful thing that people would not normally spend that money on themselves. So I think that is a really great idea. It could go from dirt cheap all the way up to something very nice.
True. True. And so I'm just going to say this in advance. Miranda and I did not share our ideas with each other. We do not know what the other one's going to say. And I didn't pick the same thing, but it's on the same theme. Okay. So my recommendation for something that is very cheap, and when I say very cheap, you can make this yourself, probably from items you already have in your own house. Like, you probably don't even have to go purchase anything. And that is a sugar scrub.
It's nice.
Very similar to a lotion, in the sense that when people are working with their hands, whatever their craft might be, even if their craft is sitting in an office and handling everybody's paperwork, everybody's hands get torn up in the wintertime, and sugar scrubs work really, really well. And you can make them, just like I said, with stuff you have lying around your house. So most people have some type of sugar in their house, whether it's granulated or sugar in the raw. both of those will work. The only thing you wouldn't want to use is a super fine sugar, because if it's super fine, it will make a paste. It won't make an exfoliant. And then if you just look online for like homemade sugar scrub recipe, you'll find that people make them with coconut oil. People make them with various types of cooking oil. You just don't put very much in the sugar, so that you basically get just a little bit of oil that will help nourish your skin and help the sugar kind of slip around on your hands. And it is so good for getting all those little bits of loose skin off, right? And then you'd follow it up with a salve of some type, and it's perfect. And you could make that, like, if you want to like jazz it up a little bit, you could put some like flavorings and like scented stuff, an essential oil of some type, vanilla. I made once, for baking purposes, actually, I made a lavender scented sugar just by putting lavender buds inside of a little container that has sugar in it. And so you could keep that in the sugar scrub, like the lavender buds wouldn't hurt anything. And if you can't afford any of that stuff, then just tell people that the salve that you made is for sensitive skin and doesn't contain any scents. No fragrances. Good.
You know what? That actually might be the right gift for everyone.
Yeah. And then, like, for the containers, I mean, most of us have stuff around the house that would be appropriate for that too. I mean, even just a little jam jar, or, you know, like the little container that a little candle, like a little votive candle might have come in, you can put sugar that in there. So you can do this for almost nothing, but
I was going to say, like,
appreciate it.
There's also, like, I'm not saying you can dress up a plastic bag, but there are plastic bags out there that you can dress up and make that work. There's so many ways that you can present that. Or you can even, I've made with parchment paper envelopes and things like that. So there's ways.
Yeah.
That's a great one. And I've recently discovered the love of scrubs. That is not my favorite thing normally, but as of recent, I am addicted. I love it.
It's a big difference.
All right. So shall we move on to the $20 category?
Yes.
I will admit I have a couple things here.
All
right. And okay.
Tis the season of excess. Might as well go for it.
I got two. And this is a little bit more with a quilter's bent, but it's also anyone in craft. Anyone who likes doing crafts will appreciate this and will use them. I think that's the other thing, is I don't want to give frivolous things. Yeah. I want people to use what is given. Or if they can't use them, they can give them to someone else to use. Like, I'm all about practical. So my $20, my number one is really good snips or scissors. And they could be really cute.
Oh, some of them are so cute.
So cute. And it's just something that, like, there is, I don't want to go all Con Mari on this, but, like, there's something about using beautiful things every day. Like, yeah, of course I could buy some craft scissors at Joanne or Michael's and they'll get the job done. But I would love if you went to your yarn shop and you bought me some really cool scissors, or you went to a thrift store or a flea market and found something really interesting and had them sharpened for me. Like, that is cool. And I love, there's certain pairs of scissors I have that I love to travel with because they're the right size for traveling if you do embroidery. Also, when you have little scissors, you can still sit on your couch and snip all the loose threads off your quilt. I just think that there's a lot of practicality in small scissors, or snips, we'll say that. The other thing that I would mention is journals and grid paper.
Oh, grid paper is awesome for just about everything.
Pretty much. And I think that, like, a lot of people know that grid paper exists. A lot of people use grid paper. But, like, if you can find a beautiful journal with grid paper, quilters and crafters alike will love you. Because why not open up a beautiful book to start a new idea? I just think that there's something to that that changes your art of your craft and how you're going through things.
Yeah, I think it was sometime in high school, and it was probably from, you know, a math class that I was taking. It was the first time that anybody had ever shown me that style of paper, that it obviously made math concepts a lot easier to understand because you could draw them out and they would make more intuitive sense that way. And then as I've gone on, you know, outside of doing geometry and things like that, I just like it for being able to sketch ideas. It sort of gives me a visual place scale. To start. Yeah, a visual yeah. scale. And at the same time, it doesn't distract from any writing that you have to do. So if you have to take notes, that style of quartet, well, there's another name for it. I can't remember, but that style of grid paper doesn't interfere with what you're trying to.
Script.
Yeah. So that's awesome. That's great. I love that stuff. Far superior to plain lined paper, I think.
Agreed. Because then you just find yourself trying to draw a grid with the lined paper.
Yeah. And it never looks the way you want it to look.
Now, and if you do plain paper, like I get it, like a blank canvas. Oh, it's so great. But you know, there's a lot of blank paper in the world. Grid paper and then beautiful journals. And that's another idea. You could buy a really cheap idea or a cheap booklet of grid paper or moleskin with grid paper. Moleskins are nice. That's around $20. But you could go to Office Depot and get a really cheap booklet of grid paper, whether it be like in a notebook form or in a pad, a legal pad, and you can make a cover for it for somebody.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Oh, that's a really clever idea. I like it. So for my approximately $20 gift, this is actually not something that I would purchase for myself because I already have one. Somebody got it for me and it's freaking genius. It's called a Circa counter, S-I-R-K-A. It's really helpful for knit and crochet. It's by a company called Grello and Gray, and I'll put it in the show notes on the website so that if people want to buy it, they can see where to buy it. You can buy it from Webs and a bunch of other knitting shops online. And you can probably buy it in your local yarn store as well because it's the only thing I've seen like this. Essentially, somebody's having a good time in New Orleans.
The streets of New Orleans. God bless. Sorry. I hate saying that, but so true.
So the Circa counter is this super clever invention where it's basically, it's got a face on it. And the face has three little movable hands that are in different colors. So mine happens to have a gray hand, a yellow hand, and a blue hand. And then behind that, it's got a counter wheel that's three different wheels. One is, they match the colors of the hands. So one is blue, one is gray, and one is yellow. And so knitters out there will know that when you're reading a knitting pattern, you'll see this dreaded, do this and at the same time do this other thing. And you're like, shit, how am I supposed to keep track of...
That sounds complicated already, exactly. And I don't even know.
Every four rows, increase one stitch at the left side. At the same time, every six rows, make a buttonhole. And you're like, fuckity fuck, how am I supposed to know how to do that? And the Circa counter makes it so easy. So the front dial is numbered, like, I think 1 through 36. I don't have it in front of me, but it's a wide range of numbers on the front. And you move the little hands on the front to, let's say, 4 and 6 for the example I just gave. So every four rows you do one thing, every six rows you do the other thing. And then you move the little dials around every time you knit a row. And so when the little counter that matches the color of the hand hits that point, that's your visual reminder. I do an increase on this round, but I don't make a buttonhole. And then you move the next dial, the next number of rows. And that's how you, and it will remind you now is buttonhole time, but not increase time.
Cool. That's great.
It is so clever and it's so low tech. Like it does, you know, it's an analog counter wheel, but visually it's very pretty. You know, it comes in interesting color stories and it's so easy to learn how to use. And it has saved me on so many projects where I, you know, if I'm counting rows and I get to row 28, I have to remember, is that a multiple of 4 and 6 or just 4? No, it's only a multiple of 4. And I have to do something on row 30 because that's a multiple of 6. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. You don't have to remember any of that stuff anymore. You just use this little device and it reminds you when it's time to do the thing.
It's awesome.
It's great. And it's about $20. And it's good for knit. It's good for crochet. It might even be good for other crafts that I'm not thinking of, like maybe tatting, lace making.
Yeah. Something like that. That for sure.
I don't know. But anyway, that's my...
I say for sure, so, even though I don't tat. I don't make lace. But I don't tat. I like saying that. That sounds great. Tatting. Not into tatting. I love it. You know, side note, and the white wine's going to have a conversation right now. P.S. If you're into tattoos, don't ever say tats. I'm just going to stop you right there and be like, don't talk to me. Sorry. There, I said it. It's tattoos. There, tatting. I said it.
Tats.
Yeah. Tatting.
That's lace making.
That's lace making. And yeah, I just don't know if tats have a place in my life.
Nope.
Tattoos and tatting do. Mm-hmm. There, that was just my little PSA. I don't know if that's a PSA. It might just be a little bit of white wine talking. But okay. That's an awesome piece of simple machinery, and mm-hmm. I dig it. I think that's really cool, especially because it doesn't involve this is kind of funny. I hate gifts that involve a second part.
Oh, so like second? Yeah. Gifts where you have to
gifts
buy
that need batteries?
BS.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that. I'm gonna swear right now. Like, nothing is more disappointing to children than giving them a gift that involves batteries. Like, oh, you forgot the batteries? Well, you just ruined Christmas, jerk. Like, I'm just kidding. I'm not saying I don't think that's real, but I do have a thing about, like, don't give me a gift and a job.
No. Like, absolutely not.
Give it to me all together, and I will make it work, and I will love you forever. But yeah. I got a mojito set one time, and I'm not going to act like it's a big gift. It was something that my company gave away to everybody. And I was literally like, where's the booze? You gave me all these things in a giant box and no booze. Okay.
That's awesome.
I'll just wait. And I never used any of it.
You know,
cause you didn't give it prepared. I sound like a brat. That's fine. Whatever.
I do think there's something to be said though for not giving somebody, like you say, a job. Don't give them a gift that they have to work for unless they've asked for it. Like, if a person asks for a gift like that,
specifically,
great. Yeah. But you know, if it's meant to be something that is gonna bring them joy in that moment, don't have it be a two-parter where you're like, hope you have fun trying to figure out how to get through the hardware store on December 26th. Like, no.
Oh
no,
you mm-mm. jerk. Mm-mm. Just no.
Mm-mm.
Like, oh, I can't wait to enjoy this in 2 days. Come on. And even if you don't celebrate the holidays, this goes for all gifts, anniversaries, birthdays, anything. Don't give me something like, and with the exception is plants. Of course I'll keep it alive. I will do my best. There's no promises, but I am going to do my best. That's a job I'm willing to take. But no puppies, no kittens, don't do that bullshit. And then also don't give me anything that involves going out and buying more batteries, more things.
More stuff.
Just, that gets an official. Okay, thank you, white wine, for showing me the way. Okay, shall we go on to splurge?
Yes.
So splurge, I want to know from you, mm-hmm. because I've listed two different splurges.
Oh.
And there's levels.
I say, share them all.
Okay. So sure. Number one for splurge. And that's actually only $5 more than my $20 bucket. However, there are ways to make this gift really great. And that is getting shears. Mm-hmm. A beautiful set of shears. And I'm not talking Fiskars. No offense to Fiskars. They're available everywhere and they get the job done. I'm talking about like Ginger shears. I'm talking about.
Those are nice.
Yeah, they're really nice. And they can also be monogrammed. I actually haven't had mine monogrammed, but I know other people who have. So it's just a sweet gift. It literally says, I thought about you. And I thought of your name. Got it all together. But there's also like getting shears, because everyone's going to have their own favorite set of shears. But there's researching options that might be maybe on a more small business scale, or maybe it's a Japanese brand that isn't super popular. Like the Japanese and Korean market are awesome in crafts. They have beautiful crafts. They have beautiful businesses that have really invested in finding new ways to make it a precious thing, a sacred mm-hmm. thing. And I don't normally would like sacred or precious, but when it comes to gifts, that involves people putting in time and effort on making things that you wouldn't always normally buy yourself. Mm-hmm. And that also involves you buying it for other people. So I think that like researching a hard to find pair or a handmade pair of shears or going out and having your beloved's shears sharpened. Oh, I hate getting that stuff done. I'll buy a new pair of shears before I go and get them done. But like, I'm lucky my boyfriend, Chris, is always on top of getting things sharpened and handled. And I think that those would be a great gift as well. Getting things sharpened, it sometimes costs as much as the shears themselves, but it's
depending on what has to be done, it can be. But like you say, for a good pair, such a nice gift.
And then a holder for those shears, like getting something crafted, something leather or something, a beautiful case to carry it in. It just says so much about like, I appreciate what you do. I mm-hmm. appreciate what you like and believe in. So like, let me invest a little bit more in what you do. I will counter this though. Little spiritual witchy hoo-ha me is like, don't give knives as gifts. That's a terrible omen. But at the same time, I am so bad at taking care of the things that I rely on, like shears. And those are things that I'm like, if someone went out of their way to have them sharpened for me or get me a new pair that just cut like butter, I love you. You're great. And then on the other side of this, if you're a true quilter or maybe you're into other paper crafts, getting a really nice rotary cutter. There's like the basics that you get at Joann's. That's cool. That gets the job done. But you're going to buy a lot of blades because they're not – I'm not going to say they're not sharp. But the thing is, like, they're not – they're kind of standard. If you go onto Amazon – you will find so many different types of rotary cutters out there. And like Ulfa, which is like kind of like the, I'm not going to say they're the gold standard, but they're the most nicest standard that's pretty common.
How is it spelled?
O-L-F-A. Mm-hmm. But Ulfa is pretty famous. They've been around a long time. They're standard. And what's important is that when it comes to rotary cutters, it's not like buying a pair of shears that like, oh, I bought a pair of shears. I can sharpen them forever. They're going to last forever. It doesn't matter if they go out of business. When it comes to rotary cutters, you need the holder, the cutter itself, and the blades to all work together because it's all mechanisms that are employed together. So at least Ulfa is a very trustworthy brand, but they have like titanium and tungsten and other levels of metal blades that no quilter who doesn't have a lot of expendable, you know, income would be able to normally buy. So that's a great gift to give someone, is something that says, I believe in your craft. I believe in what you do. And maybe I'm being like too emotional about it, but like, it just says like, I invest in the crafts that you get, that you do. Here's something that's really high quality that won't dull so fast mm-hmm. or can cut through many layers to make your job easier. Yeah. Those are all really great gifts.
That's a thing that I never think about because I always use scissors, but as my husband has pointed out on a number of occasions, my husband is an art school kid and he can tell when I have cut paper
With scissors. Versus an X-Acto.
Yeah. So he can tell on the edge, but also he has, I'm pretty sure he has a pair of scissors that I'm not allowed to touch because I would use them for cutting paper and mess them up because paper is so hard.
And I mean, I've heard it's a wives' tale that paper and fabric are different, but I don't think it is possible. I think that there's legit reason that they are separate.
Yep.
And also it's about people dropping scissors too. Some people are real klutzes. And when you nick paper, well, you're better than me. I'm really happy to still be on this earth. pretty pumped about it. But honestly, like when you drop scissors, like that changes the blade. It absolutely does, you know? Yeah. Anyways, I'm waxing poetic. Thank you, Pino.
So my splurge gift, and this is a splurge gift that's really only for knitters. So I think they maybe make crochet hooks, but I think about these as a knitting item and they are in the $120 price range. These are the Lykke, which is spelled L-Y-K-K-E. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation, but I think it's Lykke. driftwood needles. So these are needles that are made from driftwood. And in my case, I bought an interchangeable set where you can change the size of the wooden needle and then have like a plastic cord that connects them. So knitters will do this in order to knit something that's very wide without having like very, very, very long, firm sticks that they're knitting on, because that would be unwieldy.
Right? That's going to look like a Harry Potter wand situation.
Exactly. But man, I tell you, everything from the individual needles themselves to the whole way the thing is packaged is so beautiful. The individual needles are this beautiful sort of cool gray brown, just like you would think of driftwood. They're polished to a really nice shine, but they still have a little bit of grip on them, so your stitches don't slip off.
Yeah, it's not like metal needles.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then the points are just pointy enough that you can knit with them, but they aren't so pointy that you'll split your yarn. The whole thing comes in this really beautiful sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Weathered black denim packaging.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know if it's actually denim or if it's just made to look like denim, but it is a really lovely sort of weathered black color with a little magnetic closure. And the sets come with stoppers so that your stitches don't fall off the end, and multiple lengths of cord for whatever style you like to knit. And so now these sets come with the standard size, which is about 5.5 or 6 inches for the interchangeable needles. They also have shorty sets. So if people, like if you have somebody in your life who likes to knit socks, those shorty sets are really nice. And I'm pretty sure they make crochet hooks as well. The whole package, the whole thing, start to finish, is just gorgeous. And it is expensive. You know, $125 for a needle set is expensive compared to what you would buy as an interchangeable set that's made of plastic. You know, it's not a beginner's set, but they're gorgeous. And if you have somebody in your life who enjoys that kind of thing, it's definitely a thing that you can use for a very, very, very long time.
What I dig about it is the materials being used, though. They're driftwood, which means reclaiming and also texture. And I think that that is really important because, like, again, metal needles had that weird popularity for a long time, but they're really tough. They slip everywhere. Like, it's just not, I mean, I'm not a knitter, but I just feel like they had their like time in the sun and everyone's like, forget it. We're good here. And I think that there is something so great. Even if someone doesn't use it that often, the presentation is beautiful. I'm a sucker for presentation. I think that's half of the experience. Buying and shopping involves half of just being in the store, the experience and what you get out of it, the packaging, the bag, all of it. So, that sounds like a beautiful gift. I'm very into that. I think that's very cool. And it sounds like it's a smaller company. Am I right?
It is a smaller company. And I bought mine from a company or a store in Roanoke, Virginia that I've talked about before called The Wool Workshop, that's owned by the woman on Instagram whose handle is Skein Cocaine. So if you want to talk about somebody who edits their collection very, very well, she does. Her shop sells yarns that are hand selected for a specific reason. They're beautifully put together. And she was one of the first people in the United States to carry those needles in a way that I could order them. They weren't carried at my local yarn shop. I did look, I didn't find them there. So yeah, you kind of have to hunt for them a little bit, but they are available online from various retailers and they are making themselves more available to local yarn shops. So if your local yarn shop doesn't carry them, you can ask and they can probably order because they're distributed by a larger umbrella company that most local yarn shops purchase from.
Do care.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they have crochet hooks by chance?
That's what I was saying is I think they do. I'm not 100% sure, but that's something I can put in the show notes on the website as well.
Okay. I think that's awesome. Yeah. These are great gifts.
Yeah.
Big fan.
So that's all we had for today. We're going to forego the gold star because the gold star is the holiday season. The last thing I want to say is that we're so grateful that you guys have come back to listen to us. We really appreciate you, and we appreciate all of your helpful suggestions and comments. If you have a suggestion that you'd like to make, you can leave it on our website, stitchcraftsisters.com. You can just comment on the individual episode, and that comment won't become public unless I make it public. So don't worry. If you want to say something critical, but you don't want to look like you're clowning us to the world, don't worry. You don't have to. And if you like us, then one of the best ways to promote us is to give us a review on iTunes. We would like to thank our very first reviewer, Biddy Forever. Biddy Forever left a sweet review on iTunes, and we really want to thank you for that. So if you feel so inclined, please join her. It would be super helpful.
Absolutely. And I'm really hopeful that you guys will leave comments also on our Instagram and our Ravelry page, just commenting on things like as far as like other gift ideas, because Lord knows we're just thinking about ourselves and what works for us or what we'd like to get, but also like any suggestions on crafts, any ideas on gifts, any ideas about what we're talking about, super open to. Bring it.
You can find us on Instagram as Stitchcraft Sisters, and you can find us on Ravelry as the Stitchcraft Podcast group.
Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you guys in like 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, yay!
Yay! Okay.
Bye.
Take care.